Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Workers Mic right here on 720 WGN. Ken Edwards, Midwest Coalition of Labor. Phil Davidson, Mid-America Carpenters Regional Council. How are you?
Good morning. How are you, man?
Good morning. Really, really good. We are missing Ed. I think Ed is out pounding the pavement for the MCL, bringing on some new members.
Fighting a good fight.
Oh, a lot of driving lately.
I heard that.
Yeah, a ton of driving.
Yeah. How many miles you put on, like, the last year?
It's got to be in the 50, 70,000 range.
Holy Moses.
Yeah, it's
I should a lot be of oil changes.
Well, that's for sure. I should be flying.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But like, you're not a big fan of flying, I'm told.
I don't mind. Look, I'm not scared of flying. I don't really care one way or the other. But by the time you get to the airport, go through security, wait for your flight, then your flight gets delayed.
Yeah.
I'd just rather have sort of fate in my own hands and get in my car.
You need to get a Madden cruiser. Remember how John Madden used to tour around the country in a big bus? We got to get the MCL bus.
Or the fight back bus or something.
There you go.
So, all right. Later today, we're going to have Nick from Megan Financial.
Yeah.
Or one of our major, major sponsors, talking about some really interesting things about, you know, let's continuing to teach our members, myself included, about financial literacy, right?
Yes.
And we got to continue to learn this stuff to continue to move the ball forward, especially right now while work is good and we have some extra dollars and cents. Let's find out what to do with it.
Right. And just explain just the numerous benefits and retirement options that members have.
Yep.
And yeah, it's all good information, even if you're not a member of Union. It's good to hear.
I absolutely agree with you.
Yeah.
And then before we start, I just want to say thank you to a ton of people lately that have been sending emails to our WGN email, right? It is workersmic@wgnradio.com.
Correct.
Yeah, workersmic@wgnradio.com. Keep sending your comments, suggestions, etc.
Your glowing reviews.
We'll take the glowing reviews. And, you know, some folks have said, like, hey, you talked about such and such. You know, a few weeks ago, I found that really interesting. Can you do me a favor and follow up?
Yeah.
And so, in answer to your question, and one of them was specifically about flight attendants, we're going to have some big news on that soon.
Exciting
news. Yeah, super, super cool stuff that's happening. So, Phil, we want to talk about, like sort of top of the hour stuff. You were talking about an article that came out that talked about, like, really big picture labor United States.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. There was it came out a couple weeks ago. You know, the National Labor Relations Bureau puts out a report every year where they just go over, like, the state of the industry, the state of unions. And the latest figures are that unions are filing petitions to hold elections and winning them at rates not seen in decades,
really?
According to recent data released by the National Labor Relations Board, the Bureau. They said this year alone, they've already received more than 2,600 union election petitions in the fiscal year that ends September 30th, and that's a 32% increase.
Wow.
Compared with this time last year.
Wow.
And
last year was union summer.
Last year was hot union summer, so yeah. Not to be outdone. And unions are winning more elections, 79% this year, in cases where they petition for an election.
Wow.
And as recent as a few years ago, they were winning 60%. So from 60% to 79%, they're up, they're winning.
If you're winning 80% of anything in life, you're doing pretty good.
You're doing really well. Right? Yes. I think we've entered the hot labor era. It's no longer just a summer. Yeah. This is staying power.
I mean, that's fantastic. And, you know, it's interesting, right? So those are the petitions that are filed. There's a ton of unions out there. And by the way, that's National Labor Relations Board, which is solely private sector employees in the United States.
Correct.
So, you know, the Amazons of the world, Teamsters, you know, which are, you know, primarily private sector.
UAW. UPS,
yeah, UAWs and things like that. What it doesn't include is federal employees. It doesn't include airline, right? It doesn't include public employees.
Mm-hmm.
So there's millions and millions and millions of other employees right now that are also unionizing at the moment that you're not hearing about in that report.
Right.
But then you have to look at, you know, the Railway Labor Act, you know, the airline industry, public sector, which is really hard to figure out because every state is different. But on top of, I think, what those numbers that you just gave, I think there are tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands more, that are organizing as we speak.
Yes.
So,
yeah. And, you know, unions have shown strength in the public sector. I think that's where...
That's for sure.
You know, certainly over the last several decades where the strength has lied. But now that you're seeing the private sector where, you know, union representation has been down, you know, is very encouraging. And, you know, you can draw a line between that and the policies of the current administration, of how we're seeing more labor friendly people on the NLRB. We're seeing new rulemaking that levels a playing field and gives unions a better chance in the fight against employers.
A fighting chance.
Exactly. Yeah, so, like, you know,
and I don't want to hear this nonsense of, you know, everything's catered to the unions and making it so easy for them to organize and win.
No.
Nothing could be further from the truth. You know how hard it is to organize your workplace and get a union and then win the union. And, oh, by the way, then get a contract.
Takes years.
Oh, look at Starbucks.
Yeah.
It's still taking years.
It's still going on. Right?
Right. So don't give me the, like, everything's, you know, given to you on a silver platter. It's not.
No.
It's really, really hard. Get down in the trenches and see, you know, like, but like, a perfect example is, you know, the captive audience meeting, right? We've been talking about that. I was at the Illinois AFL-CIO convention this week.
Not to brag.
I feel like I gave the keynote speech.
Yeah.
I didn't give the keynote speech. I gave a 10-minute speech.
I mean, your name was on the marquee, so I figured.
But the governor was there, and he signed the bill into law. So no more captive audience speeches in the United States. Sorry, in Illinois. And we are now one of, I think, 8 or 10 states in the United States and more coming that are banning these things.
Right.
So when you start to at least give us a fighting chance, we're going to win more elections, right?
Yeah.
Which is what's being shown right now. And
right.
Even if you don't give us a fighting chance, if we got to do it ourselves, like the UAW, like the Teamsters, like everybody else that's out there slugging it out, you know, on the streets that you don't hear about, they're going to fight. And now they have it seems like there's a little bit of a renewed sense of purpose and energy.
Yeah.
And
the wind is behind our sails. And obviously the fact that elections themselves are up shows this is the will of the people.
That's exactly
people
right.
People want to join unions.
They absolutely
you
do.
You know, this is not workers, you know, doing this because they're being manipulated.
By union bosses.
Exactly. No, this is them saying, like, you know what?
Yeah.
I do want wage increases. I do want better benefits.
Yeah.
So why would you try to step on the will of the people? That's
well,
what I
why? Because
well,
of money,
right,
greed,
right,
you know,
right.
Capitalism, whatever.
Right.
We'll talk more about that, and then we'll get into some specific wins that we've seen recently. But we'll be right back with more of the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN.
You're listening to the Workers' Mic, powered by the Midwest Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premis Health, and Voya Financial.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN. Ken Edwards, Phil Davidson. So we're talking about some momentum in the labor movement, and we are going to tick off now some wins. Wins of the week, whatever you want to call it. So I want to start with – I'll go first and then you go.
Okay.
So I'm going to start with Disneyland, right? And that's the one in Florida, right? What's the Disneyland and Disney World?
Disneyland is California. Disney World is Florida.
So this is Disneyland, and these folks just got a $6 an hour bump and a 31% pay increase.
Wow.
Massive.
$6 an hour?
$6 an hour. So you take that over 2,080 hours is a year if you're working full time. It does not include overtime. And, you know, that's a $12,000+ year raise. That's life-changing money.
Yeah, nothing to sneeze at, for
right?
sure. Yeah,
so
good
like,
for them.
Yeah, so good for Goofy.
And there's good for Goofy, right. Sure, DeSantis isn't too happy about that. But
well, that's Disneyland, though,
yes.
Right?
Oh, right.
I get them confused.
No, I'm getting confused, right. So that's Gavin Newsom.
Well, hopefully it comes to Disney World.
Right. I thought,
what'd you say they have, 27 unions?
27 unions work there. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
But you know what, Phil? And I don't even know the rest of the details because that wouldn't... that would require me to read, you know, a bunch of stuff and actually prepare.
Yes.
I got a lot of stuff going on, you know.
Yeah.
But 31% pay increase in total, and I just saw this one statistic that I wanted to bring out, and that is they got a $24 an hour. That's the minimum wage in Disneyland in California starting, $24 an hour. You can, you know, get close to making a living on that.
Yeah.
Right?
That's the minimum wage there?
That's the minimum.
That's the starting wage.
Any Disneyland, this is what I read anyway, worker is going to now be paid at least no less than $24 an hour. So you're serving, you know, hot dogs and hamburgers or whatever it is, and you're sweating and it's, you know, hot or cold, or now you're actually getting a living wage for it almost.
Yeah. Right? Now, obviously, the cost of living in Southern California is pricey. But,
I think that's right.
But I think even at $24 an hour, that can get you an apartment somewhere. I think, like that's good money.
Yeah, good for them.
Yeah.
So that's a big win for them. Kudos to them. What else we got, Phil? You want to go?
Yeah. This is historic. Apple reached its first ever retail union contract.
That's awesome.
In Baltimore, it was for Baltimore County Apple Store. This store covers 85 employees.
Nice.
They are organized with the machinists and the contract.
Are they physically making the computers and the phones?
I think these are more not. Kidding. Yeah, yeah.
The
right.
Machinists.
Yes.
No, but machinists are smart, right? Because same thing that we talked about at UAW. Machinists are not just putting all their eggs in one basket. Machinists are going out and say, hey, we're going to organize, you know, people that want to be organized.
We got to diversify.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I have no problem with that. So they went with the machinists.
They went with the machinists.
Yeah.
They got 10% raises.
Nice.
Good money.
Yep.
And, good for Apple.
And it's their first contract.
It's their first contract.
It's Apple's first contract, period, the whole world.
Period. So now this, you know, hopefully is a precedent that's been set for other stores to organize themselves. And, you know, we crunched the numbers. Apple does have a $3 trillion market cap.
Oof, that's it?
So...
Hold on a second.
$3 trillion. So there might be a little bit of money laying around to pay people a 10% raise and give them a good living wage.
Maybe it's like, is that one helicopter off of one of their yachts? Like,
right.
You know, we'll sell that helicopter.
I know.
But hopefully that encourages other Apple... employees.
That's one less space shuttle we're going to send to the moon for Apple, but to colonize.
Good for them.
But they've never been involved in any of these constitutional battles to try to end.
I don't think Apple. I don't see. I hate to say it. At least here, right?
Yeah.
I see Apple sort of putting their money where their mouth is. They had that horrible, horrible press over this Foxconn people that were making their phones in China, and you know the people that were working there were trying to kill themselves, and they put nets out.
There so is that. There are some.
That is really bad when you can't kill yourself because the employer's like, wait a second, kill yourself? I'm gonna put out a net.
Yeah,
that's really
there is
really
some child
rough.
Labor concerns.
Yeah.
With the manufacturing,
but. Listen, if it's a start, it's right here in the United States. It's in our backyard. That's fantastic. Kudos to those guys for getting the first contract, and hopefully the rest of Apple retail sees that, right? There's an Apple store, several here in Chicago.
Yeah, one not too far from our studio here.
Yeah.
It brings up a funny point, how you said that all the machinists are representing them.
Yeah.
What, you know, my union, the Carpenters Union, you know, we're diversified as well. I know we represent... the grounds crew at Busch Stadium in St. Louis.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. What are some people that 150 organize that are outside the general scope of the building trades?
You want to hear the most outside?
Yeah.
The lawyers, the state's attorneys in Rock Island County.
Get out of here.
150 members.
No way. Yeah. Those guys are operating engineers.
They certainly are. And
only in Rock Island County.
Rock Island County state's attorneys, shout out to those guys. They're smart, they're funny, they're great. And one of my first, you know, what's called an interest arbitration case, Phil, I just got to tell you this. It's an arbitrator comes in and it's not a fight. It's a fight over contract. And he's going to decide, you know, is employers, it's winner take all, employers proposal or union's proposal. And, you know, we were proposing like 30%+ increases. The employers proposing like 3.
Yeah.
And.
Little gap there.
I was like, I don't know if this is going to work. And the arbitrator comes in. He's like, yeah, I haven't been here in a long time. I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, oh, yeah, I used to be a Rock Island County State's Attorney when I first started my career.
No way.
And I said, this is what I said. And we won massive increases for these guys. So at some point, I'm not even sure, might even be today, they're paid higher than Cook County State's Attorneys.
Amazing.
Yeah, so that was the furthest afield that we got.
The fix was in.
But, and, you know, look, there's this argument that, you know, unions should stay in their lane.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're an iron worker, you should only represent iron workers. But I think that model has to change, right? I think that we need to diversify. We need to, to spread our wings because, look, the ones that are good at organizing, Phil, and I hate to say it, but I'm talking to the building trades, not only organizing, but getting that contract.
Yes.
let us do it.
You need that power behind it. You need that muscle.
Absolutely. That's exactly right. Because these nascent small unions that are going, hey, I'm the food store workers of Main Street United that has 20 guys.
It's hard.
Super hard.
Yeah.
Right? So I think that's something that's needed, and maybe we could have a discussion with labor in general as to how to help the rest of the world organize, because there's over 100 million workers in the United States that are not in the union yet.
Yeah.
Yet. Right?
Operative word there.
Yeah. And if I'm, labor movement, and, you and I are tangentially involved in the labor movement, I see a lot of opportunity.
Right?
Like, if you're a business, if you're in any other industry in the world, you go, holy cow, there's a 90% growth potential for me here. I think I should put a lot of resources and time and effort into making that market share bigger.
Yes.
Right? It seems to be kind of a no-brainer.
And using recruitment techniques and tactics like the MCL. I mean, what better way to sell someone on a union than the amazing benefits?
I appreciate you saying that.
Yeah.
One day, Phil, we'll have this discussion about whether it would be proper to monetize organizing.
Yeah.
I have said this for a long time. The rest of the world is out there.
That's how they do in the private sector.
Sales, commission. I think if we somehow figured out a right model to do it and said to the world, you get blank dollars for every card you get signed. Well, guess what? If people are incentivized to do it and can make money and maybe even make a good living and go out and do it the right way, I think you see a game change. Because in the, as well as I do, Phil, in the union world, we go out and we organize, right? Our goal is organize the unorganized.
Yes.
And guess what that means for the people organizing? More work.
A lot more work. Right.
I'm not kidding.
Right.
We're digressing. I'm going to take a couple other quick wins.
Yeah.
Here's a big one. Pennsylvania healthcare workers, they were like nursing homes and senior care facilities and things of that nature. And I should get more of the details, but you could Google this. They got hit for $36 million in stolen wages.
Wow.
$36 million. Yep. Unpaid overtime, et cetera. And the, I think it was, it might have been the Department of Labor.
Yeah.
But
they usually investigate that. Yeah.
And then they got this money back. And,
wow.
And I'll tell you right now, I can virtually guarantee you, Phil, that there was a union or unions or worker centers, et cetera, behind that.
1,000%.
They didn't just come up on their own and go, oh, by the way, you owe us $36 million. Somebody was out there doing the hard work.
And I think any Department of Labor or Attorney General's office will acknowledge that it's very hard to investigate those types of cases.
Sure.
They generally don't have the staffing and the manpower to hire.
And you have people that are afraid,
right?
I don't want to give a testimony. I don't want to say anything because I'm afraid I'm going to lose my job.
There's that whole issue as well. It's very hard to find witnesses who want to come forward. But those investigative agencies and prosecutors' offices, they rely a lot of times on unions to go do the dirty work, to make the cases, to find the witnesses, to bring them forward.
Look, these are things that need to happen. And of course, these agencies not only are underfunded, understaffed, but now you have the Supreme Court case of Chevron saying, these agencies might not actually be.
Do they really know what they're talking about, these agencies? I wonder. Are they really experts? Yeah.
On one hand, we're moving the ball forward, right? More organizing, getting some of these wins, raising wages, et cetera. And then simultaneously, child labor laws are getting stripped away and the National Labor Relations Board is.
We're backsliding on the other hand, right?
It's weird. Yeah. We're in a weird time in this country. All right, last one, really quick. Amtrak workers just won their largest increase in the agency's 53-year history. Amtrak workers.
Wow.
They got a 34% pay raise. The average Amtrak worker now is going to make $80,000. That's massive, massive. So congratulations to those folks. We'd love to have some of those get on the air and talk about rail because we don't get a lot of that.
We can make that happen.
But we got to take a quick break. We're going to come back with Nick from Megan right back on the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN.
You're listening to the Workers' Mic, powered by the Midwest Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, and Voya Financial.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN. Ken Edwards, Ed Maher, Phil Davidson, and as we talked about, we are super stoked to have today with us Nick Corcoran.
Yep, you got that
am
right.
I saying it right?
Yes, you did. Thank you.
All right, from Megan Financial.
Yes.
And you, and by the way, Megan Financial, massive sponsor of our show, crazy add value to the unions that they do work with. And a lot of our members are super psyched about what you guys do for them.
We're all big fans.
Yeah, huge fans.
We're a big fan of the unions.
Yeah, thank you. Well, just our unions. let's not get out of control here.
Specifically, okay? your union.
Thank you so much. Yeah. Okay, fair enough.
Well done, Nick. You're going to do just fine here.
All right, so Nick, you are what? An investment executive? Like, what does that mean?
Yep, it's that's pretty much just an internal title.
Okay.
Technically, all of our advisors here are licensed fiduciaries.
Yes.
You can call us retirement planners.
So let's stop for a quick second.
Yeah.
Because we talk about this a lot. When you say licensed fiduciaries, explain in plain English what that means.
So a fiduciary is a certain licensure that financial professionals can get. You do have to take a certain test for it.
Mm-hmm.
You are regulated a certain way. You have certain continuing education requirements.
Yeah.
And what this does is it holds us to a higher standard than, say, you're just regular broker out there.
Okay.
We have to put the client's best interests above our own. Not that, you know, that's it typically required, I say, on a basic level, but it puts that at a legal level for us to do.
Okay.
So when you come and meet with us and we look at your situation, when we make recommendations, it has to be coming from us analyzing your situation and recommending truly what we think is best beyond all else.
So it's not just like Joe Broker saying, hey, I have a great fund and I'm going to make a massive commission from this and you should buy this fund.
Yeah, it's completely different than
that. Okay, and then I want to go back to this for a second because we get this a lot in union land, especially on the fund level, and that is, you know, you guys know this, Phil and Ed, when somebody goes to retire, we have a bunch of different options, right? Surviving spouse, this pop-up benefit, we have an annuity, we have health care, you know, I might have some other, you know, bells and whistles over here. And a lot of times our retirees or people that are getting ready to retire will ask the fund administrator or somebody that's going through their paperwork, right? Hey, what do you think I should do? We can't actually give them advice, but you can.
Yes, we can. So because of this license that we hold, we are able to look objectively at the options, the benefits that you have, and where a fund administrator, a health and welfare department can just give you the basic facts. They can't say, hey, this route is best for you based on your individual situation.
Yes.
We like to joke that because of the benefits that you have, a lot of what the picture we look like from a person to person is a little bit similar. But at the end of the day, everybody is different. Everybody's situations is different. You have a unique life. And so for us, we can look and say, hey, these are the rules. This is what's available. If you have these options based on what you're telling us, we can say, hey, we think this is the best route. Whereas someone without this fiduciary license would not be able to do that.
That makes sense. And that's, to be blunt with you, why we have you and why we brought you aboard is that we want to make sure that our members are not just getting something like, hey, I've been working at the fund for 3 months and my job is to retire people and you know, I'm going to give you some advice. Well, we don't want that anymore. You know, let's just ship it off to you, and you give the advice because you know what you're doing.
Have the experts do it. Right.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, I think, you know, at my union, at almost every union, the people who work in the funds office, like, they're processing so many different claims and so many different, you know, paperwork from members looking to retire that I don't think they really have. It's not part of their job to sit down with them and explain their options, and that's where you come in.
Yeah.
And if you're a member of these meetings, these consultations with Megan, they're free. So
I was about to say, how much does it cost us?
Yeah.
It's nothing, right? If you're an MCL member, it doesn't cost anything.
You're absolutely right. To call us, to sit down, to consult with us and say, hey, this is my situation. What do you guys think? Hey, I don't understand my benefits. What can you tell me?
Mm-hmm.
To do that with us, whether it's in phone, appointment, in person, at our office, at your house, virtual, whatever it may be. Absolutely free.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, good. And all right, so I veered off. You came in and you wanted to talk about something specific.
Yeah, so my main goal today is to kind of cover the topic of control what you can control. You know, Ron Whittingham, the owner of Megan, has been on here many, many times talking about the fantastic job.
Who?
Ron, tall guy.
Tall guy, Italian.
Yeah. You mean the tan guy?
Slightly balding, if that sounds familiar.
Oof.
No, I'll cut that part out. Oh, boy. Love it when I watch somebody get in trouble at work.
Four subjects.
Former,
as long as it's not me.
Former Megan employee, Nick.
Now we can just talk about whatever.
Ron's got a good sense of humor, but he does a fantastic job of coming on here and talking about the great job that the unions do in providing a lot for the members, taking a lot of decision-making off the table, and the fact that you have fantastic benefits provided for you. You have pensions, which is going to be a guaranteed source of income in retirement. You have health and welfare, giving you health care in retirement beyond basic Medicare. A lot of the unions have death benefits, pretty much life insurance for the beneficiaries. Mm-hmm. A lot of the pensions have spousal benefits on there, meaning if the member passes away, that the spouse can continue to collect either a portion or a lot of the income. But all of that aside...
Is that a secret? Like, do we want to get that out there to our...
What spousal benefits? Nick.
Ixnay on the ousel benefits.
we joke on that a lot that, hey, you know, maybe it's a decision that jokingly someone may want to say, hey, I want to hide from my spouse. We say, well, you legally can't a lot of times. A lot of times on these decisions on, hey, if you want to take a reduction in your base pension to leave something for your spouse, the spouse is just a big a part of that decision as you are. A lot of times she has to sign off.
I think we make them sign off, like from 150, I believe. We make somebody, a spouse, sign off if the member chooses not to pick it.
Correct. Right? An option beyond the base, which is typically a 50% joint and survivor, so reduction to leave half behind for your spouse.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so anyway, keep going. So it's control what you can. So explain, what do you mean by that?
So outside of these benefits, there is still a large picture, a lot of decisions that people are fronted with.
Uh-huh.
And especially in today's climate, after inflation soaring like it did in 2022, with a lot of troubles on the horizon with Social Security, you know, we have a lot of conversations with people saying, hey, maybe the original plan has changed a bit, or as I'm starting this planning process and I had an idea in my head, maybe these are the new problems I need to confront. And to me, you know, some of them are familiar topics. Hey, you know, the union provides X amount of income. I need Y amount more.
Right.
Or I have, you know, this amount of debt. If I pass away, I need to make sure my spouse, my family can cover it with X amount of death benefits.
Sure.
So there is a lot of decisions that you can do, a lot of actions that you can take to make sure you address these problems.
So tick off a couple.
So first things first, Social Security, you know, typically we see it's about a third of a retired member's income, pensions included.
Right.
Social Security on the horizon, they're saying in 2033, the trust that funds Social Security is going to hit a little bit of financial trouble. Essentially, at that point, they're saying they'll pay about $800 for every $1,000 of benefits that a person has. So
which, by the way, is absolutely outrageous, because everybody in this room and everybody that's listening has paid into that forever.
Since
day one of our employment, I look back on the Social Security thing, and it's like, oh, look at my job when I was 15. I paid into it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And now all of a sudden we're going to get 80 cents on the dollar?
Oh, yeah. And that's the funniest thing. I remember my first paycheck, you actually get the physical stub, and you're like, gross pay, this is awesome. You're like, what the hell is FICA? And you're looking at what you're paying into Social Security and Medicare. And that trust for a long time has been paying out essentially more than what it's bringing in. I mean, from day one, Social Security is old age and survivor's insurance. It's meant to protect against someone who has lived longer than their expected life is supposed to be. And actually, the original full retirement age for Social Security was set at life expectancy in 1935.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So it really hasn't kept up with what its original purpose was supposed to be.
Right.
So if we're looking at 2033, which is not too far away, and saying, hey, right now they're projecting it gets cut, you know, we have to factor that in. Someone who's planning to retire or who's retired should factor that in.
Do you think that somebody should hedge their bet? You think that there's an actual possibility that our government and the corporations that run it are going to let Social Security fail?
I wish I could tell the future. The only thing I'm somewhat certain on, and this is just my opinion, is that something will change. Something, to me, has to change.
Push back the retirement age, lower the, you know, the rate of return, whatever.
They've already taken some actions. They've taken away what I'll call like dual filing. So if you're a spouse, you have a spousal benefit through Social Security as well. Some people could collect one option and let their other one build and go on that larger amount later. They've taken that away.
Yeah.
So they'll cut down some options, I think. But at the end of the day, there's two problems they got to address. Current cash flow, which is what you're paying out now, and then obviously everybody in the future.
Yeah.
And I think the current is probably the most important one, seeing as that's right on the horizon. So
let me ask you this. Just your opinion, or I think this is fact. If the corporations paid their fair share of taxes, if the billionaires and company, the 1%, paid their fair share, would we be in the same financial situation with Social Security?
I think that it would make the situation far better if they paid their fair share.
Thank
Absolutely.
You. Thank you. You listening, Elon?
You know he is.
Of course he's listening.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if
he's got nothing else to do, his stock just tanked.
Well, he's going into money-saving mode, too. He was
about to give Trump like $45 million
a month, and then like 2 days later, he's like, I changed my mind.
Yeah. You know, I immediately regret this decision.
Turns out I've upset many, many people.
How much of the Social Security problem is related to just the baby boomers all drawing from it now and being the largest generation, and then obviously the birth rate declining and not as much going in?
Yeah, I'd say it's a large part of the problem. I mean, obviously, it's no fault of their own for being born and being a part of a generation for the longest time.
Oh, I blame them.
Yeah. For the longest time, they were one of the largest generations in America, and they are all retiring now en masse. They've all, you know, reaching that age, and as they go on, you know, there's decision on Social Security to collect early at 62 or
right,
wait.
Right.
But a lot of them are collecting early, again, just to meet the budget
right.
at this point. They're collecting earlier with reductions. It is a big part of it, especially because outside of them you do have larger generations now like Gen X and millennials, but you know, still we're paying in less than what's going out. Yeah. So there is a demographic issue for sure in that problem.
So you said something earlier, and that is that if, you know, what you typically see with retirees who have pensions, that they expect that Social Security will make up about a third of their retirement income. Now, for the general population of folks who don't have a pension, I got to think that they're expecting that Social Security to make up a far larger portion, like a half or maybe more.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so if you are counting on Social Security and it's uncertain what's going to happen with that, the time is now to come up with a plan B, because, you know, it's kind of shaky ground to base your retirement. And we hate to see how old people are having to work in many industries now because they just didn't plan for the future.
Yeah, I think they said that the biggest applicants lately are
65 and up.
People that have already, quote unquote, retired. They're coming back to the workforce, not because they love it, because they have to.
Yeah.
Right? Right. They need to eat. And so what do you do? So go ahead, Nick.
So some of the ways you can
give our millions of listeners the actual magic advice here.
There we go.
I wish there was some magic bullet, some magic pill where you do this one thing and automatically all your problems go away. The best thing you can do is just take some sort of action. So as much as the union does for you, you still have to save on your own. You still have to invest on your own. You know, there was a conversation, I remember it was on one of these episodes, was the moving to the 401k system one of the worst decisions ever made, you know, away from the pensions? I'd say no. I think all that did is it did put the ball in the individual's court on, hey, you can save at this point, but you're not letting someone else technically manage your money. You're making the decisions on how your money's invested.
And that's worked out really well for nobody, by the way. Nobody.
Well, because maybe not everybody has used the financial advisor or has tried making these
decisions
on your own.
Well, of course. Yeah, right. Yeah. They don't have the access to you. You know what I mean? They don't understand that you even exist.
Yeah.
And so you take that money, you know, that would have gone into the pension. You know, we hear this all the time in the anti-union world, right?
Right.
Oh, you don't need a pension. If you just took that money and put it into your 401k, you would make blah, 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 you know? And so that's nonsense.
It is.
By the way.
Yeah. It is.
So what do you do when the stock market tanks? Then you're just,
you work another 3 years until it comes back up.
Right. Yes. Truly, I think those are the most important times. When we talk to members who have lived through events like 2008 or 2001, a really underrated time in the market that not many people remember or talk about, is the decisions you made during that time where you feel the worst. It's like your account is irresistible to look at as it's bleeding during these times.
Hemorrhaging.
Yeah. Which it happens from time to time. These are a fact of investing. So the decisions you make at that moment and what you do during a market drawdown of 15, 20, 25, 30%, something like a 2008, really determines how everything's going forward. You can't control what the market's going to do.
You know what the rich do? They use that as an opportunity to buy.
Yeah.
Right? Because they have the capital. They have the money. And they go,
Stocks are down,
you know, buy low and sell high.
But if
I got to, we got to take a break. Yeah. We got to actually wrap this up. And I'm sorry to cut you off.
No, you're fine.
But if somebody wants to get a hold of you, how would they do that?
You can call us at 708-444-1090.
One more time.
708-444-1090.
Okay. And if you are an MCL member and you have your money invested with you guys, you get a point off, correct? A 10% discount?
Correct. 10% discount, our advisor.
Which, by the way, is massive. I think I looked at the brokerage account that I had when I was working, and they would charge a point and a half to manage my money. You guys, I think, are now 0.9, if I'm not mistaken, for our members?
Yeah, we have a tiered, so it starts at 0.9, okay. And it gets cheaper from there.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, first of all, if you do the math, based on the hundreds of dollars I have in my account, you know, I'm gonna be a hundredaire.
Yeah.
No, but I'm serious. If you do the math on somebody that's working for 30 years, and you take a, you know, 0.5% for the next 30, 20 years, whatever it is, you could buy a car. You could buy a house with that, right? So that's a massive discount. And our members get it because of their involvement with the coalition. And you'll do, by the way, you'll take regular union members. They just don't get the discount, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. So join the MCL, you get a discount.
There you go.
There you go. Listen, Nick, I could talk to you forever about this, by the way. And I really appreciate your coming down here. This is always like really, really good information for our members. And we continue to push financial literacy for our members. We don't know this stuff. We don't even know what we don't know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And to summarize again, that is the main thing that you can do going forward. The best time to make changes, the best time to start thinking about your financial literacy was however long ago, yesterday. The next best time is today.
Yep.
Talk to us. Talk to a financial advisor. Get financially literate. Let us guide you through it. Help you make these decisions. That's the best way you can address things going forward.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
We've been talking with Nick Corcoran from Megan Financial. We'll be right back with more of The Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN.
You're listening to The Workers' Mic, powered by the Midwest Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, and Voya Financial.
Welcome back, everyone, to The Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN. That was super cool with Nick. Really, really smart guy. Good guy, too, by the way. We're going to end the show with a couple of quick things. One is we, meaning The Workers' Mic, we are so big right now and so popular that we got press passes to the DNC. Democratic National Convention here in Chicago that's coming up in a few weeks.
We didn't even have to pull any strings either. They came to us. Yeah. They're like, you are the number 3 rated show Sunday morning, so.
Which, by the way, somebody here said there's nothing to brag about. I'm like, yeah, I'm still bragging.
What are you talking about? That's a lot to brag
about. Absolutely. Thank you. So we may actually go down there and, I don't know, see if we could interview the president. I don't even know what. I've never been to something like that. Have you?
This would be my first time.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll see who's there. Obviously, there's gonna be a lot of people from labor there. So we'll try to see if we can get some heavy hitters. Maybe some international presidents.
That would be pretty cool.
Yeah, I think that'd be very cool.
Well, you know, the thing is, Phil. Like, other than if, like a Bernie Sanders, I don't recognize politicians. Like, I don't know. Like, who's the 26th district representative for the state of? I don't know any of this stuff.
Yeah.
It's not our world.
I worked on the Hill for a little bit. Well, I worked in district, but I worked for a congressman. And so when you're in it, you know most of them, amazingly. But yes, I've lost all that knowledge. You know, there's the media darlings, you know, and it's funny because some of them choose to push a national media profile and they'll take any interview opportunity because obviously the media always wants to hear from lawmakers. You know, that's what sells. And so, and then, but some of them are saying, yeah, I kind of want to keep it a little more local and just do my local radio, my local newspaper. So it really just depends. But yeah, there's so many. I mean, there's 535, so.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, this is us dipping our toes into politics a little bit, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we've had a couple of politicians on here or there, but, you know, focused on labor issues.
Right.
We're going to at some point have to, you know, pick a side, perhaps make an endorsement. We've talked about that. You know, look, I'd be happy to have either candidate or candidates on the air. I mean, I don't know how we make this happen, but
the invitation is out there.
Yeah, the invitation. And we'll actually reach out for their campaign and see if they're interested in coming on because, you know, don't forget, our listenership is, you know, whatever, it's large, right? But in terms of the Midwest Coalition of Labor, which is soon to be the National Coalition of Labor, you're talking about 300,000 members. Multiply that by their voting, you know, families, and they're primarily in you know, swing states. It's a million plus.
Yeah.
It's not a small number.
Not at all.
So, you know, if you politicians are listening,
definitely move the needle.
Yeah. Come on talk
in
to
our,
us.
In our endorsement, we'll be based on labor issues.
Yeah, for sure.
All we're looking at. Sure. Well, what's your labor record?
Yeah, we're not talking about bathrooms.
No.
All right?
No.
All right, lastly, I just got to go back to this bashing Project 2025.
And it's been a rough week. It's been a rough week for them.
They're trying to walk it back.
Yeah,
right?
I saw that.
Who'd you say like the head of this thing was?
The director.
The director.
Paul Dans.
And I don't even know who this guy is, but he...
He was also a Trump advisor, but yeah, he has since stepped down. Well, they're just catching all this heat from the Trump campaign themselves. Even the Trump campaign is like, no, we got no
even
part of
it. Even though it's got the word Trump in it about 200,000 times.
Yes, and even though it was created by several of his former staffers, workers, they realize how politically toxic it is. And so everyone is stepping away from it. Everyone is dismissing it and disregarding it. So, yeah, now head's got a roll. But obviously, for good reason, when you pour through the details, as you did,
yeah,
there's a lot of dangerous ideas.
I want to touch on one of them. And you know, I want you guys that are listening to all our worker friends out there, and to everybody, quite frankly, because everybody's a worker, is this. Number one, you can disavow this thing all you want, but guess what? It's already been written. It's already been published. Number two, you can't unring the bell.
Yes.
So walk away from it, say that, oh, we didn't mean it. Blah, blah, blah. No, you did. You meant right. It. It's there. It's out there.
You're only doing it because it's politically convenient. Right?
And then one of the things it has is basically gutting, getting rid of unions, and replacing them with something called the Teams Act, which is like, you know, teamwork and employee, blah, blah, blah. But what it is a company union. And
you have zero leverage.
You're in bed with the employer. The
yes.
employer's telling you what to put in your contract.
Right.
And so, you know, that's illegal now.
Mm-hmm.
And this seeks to overturn that. And you want to talk about, you know, basically getting rid of collective bargaining and the Wild West.
Yeah.
That would do it. So
wolf in sheep's clothing, yeah.
Yeah. So Project 2025... You know, bad thing of the week is this Teams Act. So,
yeah.
Anyway, you know, it should be a weight hung around these folks' necks because you're the ones, you know, that are pushing this thing. And not to end on a sour note, labor on the upswing, great things coming,
yes.
Labor Day coming into town and parades and all that kind of great stuff. We'll have more on the DNC.
To the birthplace of the labor movement, Chicago, Illinois.
Of course, absolutely,
yeah.
right here. And so thank you for listening. Thank you for your support. Thank you for all your emails. Thank you to all our sponsors. We'll talk about some new sponsors coming on. And we'll be back next week with more of the Workers' Mic. Right here on 720 WGN.
The preceding episode of The Workers' Mic was powered by the Midwest Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, and Voya Financial. For additional information and podcasts of The Workers' Mic, visit WGNradio.com.